You're listening to Speak Free with Simon O'Connor, right here on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
Well, we've all been following the news about a cybersecurity firm called CrowdStrike. And if, like me, you were trying to check into a hotel or get onto a flight or buy your groceries, you found out come Saturday that the systems weren't working. And so because this has been such an important issue, not only of what happened, but what this means for our digital economy, what it means for our critical infrastructure, I've called on Brian Cole from the University of Waikato to come and have a chat. He's a research project developer there, which in, well, long and short means he works with stakeholders and links them into the university. But importantly for me, and knowing of Brian, he's a man who understands these sectors. He's been involved in the private sector with the military. He's a smart cookie. So, Brian, welcome to the show.
Kia ora, Simon. Thank you for having me. Look, it's fantastic to be here, and I look forward to being able to speak about this this recent thing that's happened with CrowdStrike.
Yeah, well, give us the 101, the, if you will, layman, but that'll get me in trouble. The layperson's understanding what happened, who's CrowdStrike, and what happened.
Sure. Well, so the quick sort of 30-second rundown is that CrowdStrike is a cybersecurity company. They released a patch recently to the kernel driver that they operate. The patch was caused Windows machines to do this thing called a blue screen of death in a continuous loop. And it took down approximately 1% of computers, which unfortunately, the vast majority of which were critical infrastructure. So as you can imagine, this was quite a big issue. And it left a lot of people in the lurch because that critical infrastructure was things like supermarkets, this was hospitals, this was banks, this was airports. And really it left people unable to do very much. So CrowdStrike really quickly got onto this. So this happened, worst case scenario, on a Friday when everybody was getting ready for the weekend. They released this patch. It wasn't fully tested. So usually there's a process that patches will go through, which is called sort of like the Windows Hardware Quality Labs. So anything that has to go to the kernel gets certified by the Windows Quality Labs. And essentially what happens in this case is because that's a normal process, which is quite slow, what CrowdStrike did instead was they opted to do this thing called dynamic definition files, which is a much quicker way to do updates to the kernel. And the kernel, in case you don't know, is like a really low level operating, the lowest kind of level that you can get for an operating system for the computer. So you've kind of got the kernel, which is the lowest level, and then kind of like any of the user interface or the user level sort of sits above that.
So basically their patch, they didn't go through, I mean, I'm sort of interpreting this, but
sure.
They basically were making changes at the most basic level of computer systems. They didn't test it perhaps in the way they should have. And then ironically, probably the world's at this point leading cybersecurity firm managed to stuff things up in a sort of a self-inflicted screw up, if I could phrase it that way.
That's pretty much a nice summary. Yes. So the Falcon sensor, which is the kernel driver that is being run here, is basically this thing called endpoint detection. And the idea is that for all of those terminals that people have got, for all the computers that people have got that are sitting in those hospitals, those supermarkets, those banks and airports and everywhere else, should any malware get onto those or any sort of malicious software get onto those, the endpoint detection software is hopefully going to be able to pick up any anomalies or anything that's going wrong on those and then be able to sort of flag it before it can do anything, that it shouldn't be able to do. But To be able to do that, you need to be able to update it on a regular basis to be able to look out for these things called zero days. So a zero day is when a new threat is identified. On the very first day, because in computer science you start counting from zero, so on the very first day or the zero day, you want to be able to send out a patch to be able to try to fix the any vulnerabilities that are identified. And for CrowdStrike, there's this sort of incentive to sort of stay ahead of the curve, right? So in the event that that a new vulnerability is discovered, you want to try to make sure that all of your users get the new threat intelligence as quickly as possible, get the updates so that none of the machines can be compromised. And especially if you've got, say, banks or some of those other things, you know, these are really high priority customers and you want to make sure that their computers are protected and that yours isn't the one, yours isn't the piece of software which causes them to lose hundreds of millions or billions of dollars or whatever. Unfortunately, in this case, the patch that they sent out had an error, and that error caused the screens to all, the computers to all end up in this loop. And so the only way that people could fix it was by sending out a technician, and the technician then having to start it in safe mode and delete a bunch of files to be able to get it to work again.
So massive, massive implications. I mean, from your viewpoint and understanding, so again, this wasn't deliberate. This was not a cyber attack. But does it tell us something about the fragility, and excuse if I use the wrong language, but the fragility or the lack of resilience in our systems? You know, there are a lot of people who go, well, surely we need alternatives. And I suppose the context for some, Brian, is we're heading into an almost digital-only world. I know for some of the listeners at the moment, there's, you know, questions and concerns around digital currencies, for example, a cashless society, who look at this and go, oh, my God, the whole system fell over because someone coded something wrong. What does that look like if there's a more, what's the right word, sustained cyber-driven attack that takes out systems? So, yeah, what does this tell us about the resilience of our critical digital infrastructure and then everything that comes out of that?
Yeah, so these are some of the questions that are starting to be asked, and, you know, particularly questions like, should we have this much of the market share of things like critical infrastructure all with a single vendor? Like, is that a good risk mitigation strategy, or should we be looking to make sure that, you know, a portion of the market share sits with different providers, so that in the event that this sort of thing occurs, that only a portion of the market is actually affected? And, you know, when you're sort of talking about things like, you know, the cashless society and other things like that, that's definitely one of the really good arguments for wanting to make sure that the market is diverse, rather than just having these single pillars. But, you know, like, I've worked with some really great people that have worked on the internet, and it's really interesting to sort of see when they talk about it, and they say, well, the internet is constantly broken. It's actually a miracle that that things get from one end of the planet to the other end of the planet, because, you know, the internet is constantly being patched and broken, you know, in a multitude of ways. And it's really only because network engineers are working, you know, hammer and tongs to be able to sort of come up with new and interesting ways to be able to evolve the network so that it's able to continue to keep up with the demands of the modern society. You know, I think, you know, the whole panic that sort of came around people going, well, now I can't use my Apple Pay to be able to purchase things, and you know, I need to pull out my gold reserves so that I can go exchange it for some eggs and other things. You know, there was a little bit of hysteria there with that kind of thing, but I mean, we were talking about, you know, 48 hours at most, and you know, for most people, it wasn't you know, absolutely critical. There were some people that were affected that did have critical issues, so that's not to downplay what happened to them. But it does raise these questions about, well, if we are going to be moving in a way where we do have digital currencies, where we don't have, you know, sort of like physical currencies, and where we do have more of our private lives online, like have digital IDs, then what does that mean? And how do we sort of navigate those futures? And I think what we need to be able to do is have more checks and balances in place. And we need to make sure that the structures that we're putting these things in are robust and are resilient, and that we do have fallbacks. You know, I think those are really important things to have in the conversation that often get left.
Yeah, it certainly seems to be two almost trends in conversations at the moment. You obviously got that digital side we're talking about, and there are those who argue, in my term here, we need to keep an analog paper-based, cash-based system. It's got to be in parallel. The others, of course, are saying, well, look, we are just heading towards a digital future. Let's make sure it is diverse, broad, resilient. As you say, the irony at the moment is CrowdStrike was pretty much the cybersecurity, and hence it, as you said, I think 1% it affected, but that was a critical point. I mean, is this something which corporations need to look at, governments? Is it a regulatory approach that says, you know what, we've got to diversify, or do you think the market will respond now?
So I suspect that the market will respond. So we've already seen CrowdStrike's stock price start to take a bit of a hit as a result. So the market is a fantastic driver of need. And, you know, I would not at all be surprised to see new entrants into this market. That might not necessarily be a bad thing. Because, you know, if there are more players in the market, particularly when it comes to critical infrastructure, then that might be a good thing. So there's the golden lock theory, which is, you know, you can have a multitude of locks or you can have one golden lock. And so, you know, it's really hard to get through 1,000 cheap locks because, you know, just the time it takes to get through 1,000 cheap locks takes a really long time. But if you've got one golden lock, then all you got to do is get around the one golden lock. And sometimes if you can just walk around the one golden lock and get around to the back door, which doesn't have a lock on it because you can only afford the one golden lock, then that one golden lock isn't actually worthwhile. So
I suppose that's what we've learned through this particular circumstance. I suppose the final question is, this again was self-caused or self-inflicted, not deliberately by CrowdStrike, that they made a mistake, but, you know, does this send us as a society a wider or a deeper warning around actual cyber attacks? You know, do malicious actors look at this and go, boy, look at what havoc can be created by one simple mistake, you know? So again, do we just have to build up our resilience here to try and prevent actual deliberate malicious attacks in the future?
So yes, absolutely. I think, you know, particularly here in New Zealand, the National Cybersecurity Centre are acutely aware of the challenges in and around critical infrastructure. I think that big organizations need to be sort of really looking carefully at what their posture is, what their arrangements are. You need to be ensuring that your attitudes towards cybersecurity cannot be cybersecurity is one and done. It never is. Cybersecurity is a continual thing which has to be on the agenda at every single board meeting. You know, what are we doing? Have we got our CISO sitting at the board and giving us a report? Are we appropriately budgeting for this? How are we updating and maintaining our infrastructure? And what else can we be doing to make sure that we're staying ahead of the curve so that we're not the next one that comes up with a data breach, so we're not the next one that comes up? Because unfortunately, we've kind of moved from a world where it was single actors, like individuals sitting in their basements who were hacking at code just to see if they could do it, to small groups of people that were doing it, then up to large criminal organisations who started to do this, and now we're looking at state actors who are doing this. And this was clearly evident in 2014 when Russia was looking at invading into the Ukraine, and they targeted power plants, and we could see it quite clearly then. And even now we see state actors acting with impunity in some cases, because it's very difficult for states to clearly attribute to other states when they take actions, even though it is quite clear when you've got a lot of traffic coming from one direction where that traffic comes from.
Yeah, and of course we've had recent news around what they called APT31 and APT40, you know, CCP linked groups affecting New Zealand. So I suppose this is ultimately the big message coming out of what happened out of CrowdStrike, is that, you know, our systems are vulnerable. As I think you touched on earlier, they're constantly evolving, they're constantly broken. So something we have to work at and make sure that, you know, there are alternatives in play. Hey, Brian, thank you, though, for taking the time to talk us through what happened and your perspectives, and look forward to chatting again sometime.
Thank you very much for having me, Simon. It was a pleasure.
Are you loving what you're hearing? Well, the establishment hates it, and right now they're conjuring up new ways to try and censor RCR. To ensure you never miss a beat of the hard-hitting news you've come to know and love, make sure you're on the RCR mailing list. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.